This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The proposed Atlantic Coast Pipeline would carry natural gas through West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. It's about a 600-mile pipeline, and the route would end in North Carolina and run through eight counties in the eastern part of our state. Supporters of the project say it'll make natural gas more accessible in eastern North Carolina and help spark the region's manufacturing industry. Opponents argue that fracking natural gas will harm the environment. Joining me now is John Downey. He's a reporter for the Charlotte Business Journal and has been covering the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Welcome, John.
Howdy.
Good. Can you give us a little bit of an overview? I talked about three states, 600 miles. Tell us a little bit more about this pipeline.
Well, it's designed to bring natural gas from the shale fields, the Utica and Marcellus shale fields up in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, down to eastern Virginia, and then down through eastern North Carolina. Duke and Piedmont announced in 2014 that they planned to jointly invest in a new interstate pipeline in the state, and eventually they talked to bidders and people who were interested in building pipelines. They eventually decided to work with Dominion Resources, which is based in Virginia, which was already planning a pipeline from West Virginia to southeastern Virginia, right there, to get gas to the coast, and it's going to run down from there.
And that's Dominion Energy. So they're another power company in Virginia, right?
Yeah, Dominion Energy is a subsidiary of Dominion Resources. Dominion Energy is actually the subsidiary that will be building the pipeline.
Okay. And so the reason I ask you about this is because when we talk about a pipeline coming through, bringing natural gas, I want to kind of understand how it works. Does this mean that businesses could tap into the pipeline and use it as a power source for themselves, or does this go to the Duke Energy? They generate power, and then you get the electricity from them. How does it work? What's the point of the gas? Who gets it?
Both. Basically, Duke and Piedmont Natural Gas, which is now a subsidiary of Duke, but was not when they announced the plan, they wanted the pipeline to allow them to purchase gas, from that source, and they will have contracts to do that. Then large manufacturers would be able to make contracts to purchase gas from any supplier, coming through that pipeline. They'll have to have lines built to their
right.
Property. Piedmont may do that. Other people may do that. And then ultimately, Piedmont customers would also be able to buy gas through Piedmont.
All right. So we're talking about, and what's the cost for this project?
Well, it started off, the original estimate was $4.5 to $5 billion. The estimate now is about $5 to $5.5 billion. So it's crept up some.
Yeah, and it's gotten a little bit bigger. I think it's increased by about 50 miles. All right, so tell us what the supporters of this pipeline, Duke Energy wants it. It's a supply for natural gas to help produce electricity. Who are the supporters for this, and what do they say it's going to do?
Well, the state and local governments have been largely supportive. I believe there are some local governments that have some opposition, but largely supportive. They see it as an opportunity for economic development in the eastern part of the state. There's not a lot of natural gas available in the eastern part of the state. This will make more available, and it will make it possible for large manufacturing operations to depend on fossil fuels, either for energy or for actual manufacturing, petrochemicals, and that sort of stuff, to develop in that region. They'll have a reliable supply of a reliable and large supply of natural gas available through the pipeline. So there's been a lot of support by business groups, chambers of commerce, largely local governments, and certainly the state government in the last administration was very supportive of it. Haven't heard a lot about it from the new administration yet.
All right, so we'll wait and see in terms of what the Cooper administration does. What about opposition? What do the opponents of this pipeline say?
Well, they start off saying that Duke and Dominion and, you know, just haven't even proved that the pipeline is necessary. They say you want to build gas plants, you can already build gas plants. You can build as many as you need. You know, there's already sufficient supplies, and this is just, you know, an effort by the companies to profit. Beyond that, particularly in North Carolina, this has been very strong, the opposition to fracking itself. It's true throughout the length of the pipeline, but in North Carolina, a lot of the opposition has been based on what the perceived dangers of fracking for natural gas, a lot of methane they contend escapes, and just burning fossil fuels generally. A lot of environmental groups think that anything that encourages the burning of additional fossil fuels instead of going to cleaner forms of energy is a bad idea. There have been some objections raised, particularly in Western Virginia. There's been a lot of local opposition on local environmental grounds. You know, the pipeline is going to run through some national forests and national parks. It's going to go through some environmentally sensitive areas, and that's been a lot of concern. And people have been really concerned about their property values up around there through the mountains. A lot of concerns that it'll hurt tourism, which is very important in the mountains. There's been of Virginia. There's been less of that in North Carolina, simply because Eastern North Carolina doesn't have the same kinds of parks and that sort of stuff. There's been some objections on environmental grounds. There was, for instance, some rerouting of the pipeline around Fayetteville to avoid some sensitive wetlands, things like that.
And so we've seen groups like NC Warn and other environmental groups, national and statewide. But tell us more about local opposition. You say it's not as robust as it is in other states in Virginia. Is there local opposition? Are there people who oppose this pipeline at the local level in those places where the pipeline is going to go?
Oh, absolutely. Some are organized by counties, out through the eight counties that are, you know, it is out there and it's growing. I think it got started a lot faster in Virginia. Also, I think there's a fair amount of North Carolina opposition based on opposition to eminent domain, which has actually been something of an issue, you know, taking property for public purposes. That's been something of an issue in North Carolina, largely because of the encroachment of large cities onto smaller suburban and maybe even rural communities that surround them. And that's made people sensitive to that. So there's been there's growing opposition just on the grounds of, you know, they're going to take land from people and, you know, without really the people having a say in it. They'll get compensated, but, you know,
right,
they
but
can't really resist.
Eminent domain is one question, but also who this land is being taken from. There are questions. NC Policy Watch just issued a report very critical of the pipeline and pointing out that it is going under and around the land of mostly poor people and mostly people of color, or at least, you know, in many cases.
No, and that you're absolutely right. And that, for major infrastructure projects, the number of major infrastructure projects that somehow seem to end up in the backyards of poor and disadvantaged people is an economic justice issue that has been roiling around in the U.S. generally for some time. It's come up in North Carolina before. That is another source of objections, just the fact that, you know, they're going in, they'll say they're just buying the land where they need to, but you know, there's going to be arguments that it falls disproportionately on less influential and, you know, quite honestly, poorer people.
Mm. And this eminent domain, there's even legislation pending that would make it easier because I guess under the current law, the fact that the pipeline doesn't originate in North Carolina would make eminent domain more difficult to declare, but there's legislation that would take away that restriction and make it easier for the pipeline to get through.
Yeah, I think there remains pretty strong support, certainly in the legislature, for this project. I suspect there'll probably be fairly strong support from the Cooper administration as well. Like I said, we just haven't seen much yet.
All right. And what's the next step now, environmental, in terms of environmental review? It does have to go through a process. There was one report already by the federal government.
That's the what's called the draft environmental impact statement. It's done by the staff of the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. That study found that they said essentially you can't build something this project this major. I think the pipeline circumference is 42 inches, at least in most areas. You know, it's just a huge pipeline. You can't build something this major without some environmental impact. But the draft statement found that the impacts could be mitigated and were being mitigated, and that as long as they were mitigated properly, they did not rise to a level that caused an environmental concern that should lead to the rejection of the pipeline. However, we're in a comment period now. Opponents and supporters can comment on that initial draft statement.
I tell you what, so the comment period is open, and we will stay tuned to the story. We have to go right now, but thank you so much for that report.
No problem. Take care.
John Downey, a reporter for the Charlotte Business Journal. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.